Hey, it's Libby DeLucin again, and we're back for another podcast episode. And you guys always hear me talk about the book, talk about One Layer Deep. And I wanted to bring on somebody very, very special that actually helped me through this process. So Kayla, I'm going to call you Kayla because that's just how I know you. Kayla, go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners and we'll get started.
Absolutely. My name is Kayla Fair. I've been a ghostwriter for about 3 years. I'm the founder of Mistbound Scribe. That's my personal ghostwriting company. I typically ghostwrite prescriptive nonfiction books, also some memoirs as well for founders, entrepreneurs. Also, people just have really big ideas. So even if you're just a leader in your industry, but not necessarily an entrepreneur or a founder, I love helping people get their story out there. And I'm also a mom and a wife. My son is 4 years old and he's the joy of my life. So they inspire me.
Awesome. I wanted to bring Kayla on because, well, one, I worked with her one-on-one through some of the sessions of writing and kind of capturing my thoughts, my crazy ideas. And One Layer Deep, like, essentially did not start as that. It started, you know, as a different type of book and kind of evolved. But in the process, and in the process of also becoming a best-selling author. The book's not even out yet, but yay. It comes out September 23rd. But in that in the process of going through this whole journey and kind of documenting on social media and then doing the run for a bestseller was honestly probably one of the most exhausting things I've ever done in my life, to try to build up the momentum to sell an X amount within 24 hours to outsell other people. It's funny. I told my husband, I said, oh my God, I never want to do this again. And then I already started like, oh, I have another book idea. Yeah. And so many people have reached out to me. They're like, let me, and I'll just share some of the questions with you and you can kind of help. It's like, how do you, so a lot of people don't understand ghostwriting. So like, if you can explain ghostwriting, and then we can kind of get into some other questions as well as we go.
Even my family didn't understand when I became a ghostwriter. And essentially it's there. I mean, every single person in the world could have an amazing story to tell, but not everyone's a writer and not everyone has to be a writer. So the point of hiring a ghostwriter is essentially somebody who knows how to extract the big, biggest information, the tiny nuggets of gold. So like, we want big ideas, but you also want things that make it unique and powerful. You need someone who knows how to tell stories, because that's a lot of ghostwriting, is figuring out how to weave the stories in and out of the ideas that you have, because that's, you know, the difference between essays and blogs and being able to put your ideas out there. Cause a lot of people like to do that, but the idea of writing a book is really intimidating, because people are like, oh my gosh, how do you even start writing a book? So that's essentially why you'd hire a ghostwriter, is because there is a way to write a book consistently, because there is kind of essentially a formula for it. You know, there's systems that you have and ways to get the right information efficiently and quickly, so that way you're not, you know, wasting time going down different avenues and different alleyways and stuff. So yes, there's the writing skill that's obviously associated with it, but it's also the ability to know exactly what you want to tell in the book. And a lot of people don't even know. So ghostwriters are kind of helping the author, because I call myself a writer. I call them the author, because you are the author of your own ideas. So as the ghostwriter, I help you be super confident in your ideas, because that's a big part of it too. A lot of people doubt that their ideas are even worth sharing. And
that was me.
Yes.
I was like, and we're nobody here to wants like, to no, hear this.
This is genius. This is a great idea. So yeah. And of course, ghostwriters, there's different rules, I guess you could say, about whether you give recognition to certain ghostwriters or not. Certain contracts say, you know, some different things. But a lot of the time, ghostwriters or even people who helped in the process will get acknowledged in the acknowledgments. And it kind of is up to the author's discretion whether they give credit to it or not.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was me when I first started. I didn't think my ideas were really valid enough to be put on a piece of paper. I was fortunate enough that I had Dan kind of pushing us, Dan Martell. So I was in his group. That's kind of how we connected. Kind of pushing us to just do that thing that's kind of scary, do that thing you've always wanted to do. And I think I had to learn along the way is that we always think we need to justify something. We need to justify things that we want. We need to justify how we do something versus just stop justifying it. And I think women are the worst at this. Yep. Stop justifying it.
A proven track record to like put your name on it, kind of.
And just honor it. Like, who cares? Just honor it. Honor the process, the thing, whatever it is you want to do, and stop justifying it. And that's probably one of the hardest things for me to learn during the process, is to just honor the fact that, hey, these are the things I do, and I need to stop justifying whether is it good enough, or but somebody else does it this way versus that way. So I love that. And I'm not a writer whatsoever.
Most
at all.
Honestly.
No. And I think most entrepreneurs aren't. So if we see a lot of the entrepreneurs out there, like I'm looking at my books and I have like the Clay Mask book and Dan Martell book, you know, even Gary V's book, they use ghostwriters. For the most part, most entrepreneurs are very good at talking and sharing the story and their ideas, but they're not great at the pen to paper process.
Yeah, the pen to paper, and also the, I would say, distilling of the information as well. Because okay, someone like Gary Vee, for example, he could fill probably 15 books over because he has just so much to talk about. But in order for it to be a book that actually is impactful and like keeps people in one train of thought or solves one problem, that's when you need someone to come in and kind of make sense of the noise. And, you know, to say, okay, these are really great ideas. Save those for this book, because you can always write another book. But this one, we're going to keep it to just this. So that it brings up an interesting point that I was thinking about earlier, is the audience matters so much as well when you're thinking about what you're going to write your book about. So when you're thinking, you know, as an entrepreneur, it's like, okay, I have all these ideas and I just want to get it out to the world. And it's kind of a, you know, a big question. It's like, well, who do I write this to? Am I writing it to my family? Am I writing it to all entrepreneurs everywhere? Or am I writing it just to people in, you know, in the case of Alex Duda, in restoration? Like, you know, you kind of have to choose who your audience is, and that will also help figure out the information that you're distilling from these conversations. Because again, a lot of people don't even know who they're writing to.
No, and I have FOMO. It's not fear of missing out. It's fear of like missing others. And what do I mean by that? Like, not everything, or not of like fear of people not getting everything or getting enough. Like,
yeah.
And so there's a lot of things that didn't get put in the book. And at first I was kind of like, but why everything should go in there, but then it doesn't make sense, or it doesn't flow, or it's not completely applicable to who we're writing the book for. So like a lot of things get left out. And then at first I was kind of like, no, I want it all in. And then after you think about it, you're kind of like, oh, you're right, because this book is on this specific topic for this specific reader with this specific challenge. So I had that struggle. And then the other struggle I had was through the writing process, you know, you guys kept asking me, who is this writing? Like, who's the tone? Is it for women only? Is it entrepreneurs in general? Is it this revenue size to this revenue size? And I'm like, it's for everybody. It can't be for everybody, because if it's for everybody, it's for nobody.
Well, and so even a good example of a book that essentially is for everybody is Atomic Habits by James Clear. Almost everybody can use that book, because everybody has habits. Everybody forms habits. Everybody has bad habits. But it actually isn't for everybody, because not everyone is motivated enough to kind of change their habits. So it does still kind of cater to someone who's willing to read a book to change themselves and better themselves. So it is for people who are more self-motivated and self-driven. And that's kind of the target as well. And of course, it is for adults. It's not really for teenagers or kids and all that. So there's two different kinds of audiences you could have. Either you have it wide and shallow. So wide meaning a lot of people. Even Buy Back Your Time, you could consider being a wide range of people, because anybody in business could benefit from Buy Back Your Time. But it is speaking to people in business. So it's not as wide as Atomic Habits, maybe, because you don't have to be in business to know how to fix your own habits. But you do have to, with Atomic Habits, you have to, you know, be self-driven. With Buy Back Your Time, the first thing is hire an assistant. Most people don't hire an assistant if they're not in business. And so then, so there's the wide and the shallow, meaning even if you have all these people, the stories you use are from different industries. You're not using language that's super niche. You're not using language that only certain people would know. So even if you do use something specific, you define it first, because you're not automatically excluding certain people from your audience. And then you have the narrow and deep. So if you know, I'm just going to stick with Alex Duda. If you know you're writing for just restoration people, because his is one of the most niche books, frankly, because he's like, I'm writing for like a couple thousand people that are going to need this book. And so for him, he didn't have to over-explain concepts or lingo or anything like that, because they just got it. You know, they just knew. And all of the stories that were used throughout were related to either restoration industry or just service industry or kind of blue collar style industry, that type of thing. And so it just depends on who you're writing for and what your ideas, who they relate to.
Yeah. I feel that pain because in my book, and when you write a book, you don't also realize, the number of stories that you need in it. And even though my book is very tactical too, just the number of stories, the storytelling, ability. And so I learned through this process, I suck at storytelling.
I don't know about that.
Well, so you might not know this, and I've learned a lot about myself in the last year or so, but so I have aphantasia. I don't know if you know what aphantasia is.
I do not.
So aphantasia means I cannot recall images in my brain. I have no imagination.
Whoa. That would make storytelling difficult.
And so when people say close your eyes and envision like a red apple, I see nothing. It's black. I don't dream in pictures either. I dream in like a story, like checklist. So I'm a very checklist person. Now it's all starting to make sense. Now you're like, oh, I see that now.
That makes sense.
And so the aphantasia is also where like the concept of one layer deep probably originated from, with me not even knowing that I needed everything to its simplest form, because I cannot recall anything in my brain. It is to visually be in front of me, or I have to create processes in my life that help me. And I think at first when I learned this about myself, I said, oh my gosh, everything I make isn't going to be applicable to someone else. And my husband's like, no, it's actually going to help everyone because you've made it to its simplest form. And that's what people need. And I was kind of like, oh, wow, like you're right. I didn't think about that. And so when I had to recall stories, it's so funny. I just recall them like in a checklist. So I wasn't that great. I'm like, wait, check. It was this check. So I wasn't really good at going deep with detail in the story. And then I'm like, now I know why. Because I just learned that I have this in January of this year.
Wow. That's wild. So,
and I was born with it and I didn't know any different.
Which means it doesn't. So even something that could theoretically hold you back.
Yeah.
Doesn't actually hold you back because, well, also you are just an incredibly driven person. And so you just know how to, you know, kind of bulldoze your way through things because that's just how you are. You know, you're the definition of a go-getter person. But even talking to you on the phone, that actually didn't really come across because, we don't expect people to be able to know how to tell stories. And if someone is a good storyteller, great. Like we've definitely talked to some good storytellers who make us laugh and, you know, they know how to like reveal the punchline at the end or whatever. That's again, maybe why you hire ghostwriters. Cause to me, all the goodness is there because talking about your backstory and how, you know, your actual crazy backstory when you were younger and how you, you know, left your home and, you know, slept on trains and did all this stuff while you had a family. That just makes the story in itself. So even if you're not a good storyteller, your story is interesting enough because it's your life. So I think that's an interesting point to make because a lot of people, I think myself included sometimes, if we have maybe a more vanilla life where it's like, well, I grew up and my parents are happily married and I'm also happily married. And so it's like there's, you know, yes, of course we deal with stuff. But then you know, Dan Martell is a good example. His book opens with him talking about how he went to jail and he was running away from the cops and he was doing all this. And that makes for a really, really gripping, interesting story. So I know that there are probably some people out there who are like pulling from my own story. My story's not interesting. Why would anybody care? But I think that actually is what makes storytelling really, really powerful is even the most seemingly normal, mundane life is applicable to other people. And people see themselves in your story automatically, even if it's not quote unquote exciting.
I love that. And so for me, like the storytelling, I didn't really realize how much storytelling goes into a book. And I don't think you even realize it when you're reading it, even a very tactical book. But all the connections are made through the story, not through the explanation of the system or the tactic. It's through the story.
Yeah.
So I have another question, and I want to ask you this question. And sure. I think it was, I don't remember who said this to me, but they said, don't write a book just to write a book. Write a book mm-hmm. With a purpose, for a reason, but don't write a book just to write a book. And so I have a lot of people like that are coming up to me, and they're like, I want to write a book, but I don't know why. Like, I don't know what reason. I just feel that like my story needs to be heard. What would you tell somebody? Like, I don't really have or should I have that purpose?
I kind of agree. I don't think writing a book just to write a book, if writing a book is on your bucket list, sure. But if you're writing a book for something that doesn't mean anything to you, like emotionally, or if it doesn't have anything to do with like how you've changed, then it probably isn't worth writing yet anyway. So even as a writer, like I am pretty picky and choosy about who I work with and the kind of stories I tell, because the reason I write is to make sure that one other person in the world could be benefited from this person's story or from this person's lessons. So if you're writing a book, typically in prescriptive nonfiction, the goal of, hence why it's called prescriptive, is because it solves a problem of some kind. So if you're writing a book that is nonfiction, but it's not necessarily based on your life, because that's more memoir style, then it should solve a problem for the reader, and not just solve a problem that's been solved before, but should solve it in a way that when they start it and they finish the book, they should be even small amount fundamentally changed by the end. They should walk away with something that they're like, this is what I got from this book because it was written by this person. And that's really hard to do. Like it is a difficult thing to do, not because you have to be original. That's a big misconception. People think, well, there are no original ideas left.
No, right. There are none.
There are none. That's not what makes something really good. That's not what makes it unique. It's unique because you're the one telling it in your voice, with your stories, with your humor, with your interpretation or perception. That's what actually makes it interesting. But it's kind of like adding noise to the noise. If you're just writing a book, just to write a book, just to say, hey guys, I wrote a book, check it out. I don't know if it would be super as fulfilling as you think it would be. Versus if you, kind of what you did, which is I am telling people things about myself that no one knows. I'm sharing things about my story that make me a little uncomfortable, but I know it's going to help people, and it's going to show that even somebody who went through what I went through, even somebody with my past or my education or whatever, can do what I'm doing right now. That's impactful. And so like for a memoir, for example, a memoir shouldn't just be about grief. It should maybe start in grief, but end in resolution or end in acceptance. Or if you're, you know, starting off lost, you should find a purpose by the end of the book. So there is a journey that no matter what story or book you're telling, it has to end somewhere. And a lot of people who say, I just want to write a book, they have no idea what the beginning and the end would be. So you should probably figure that out before you try and write a book.
Yeah. A few things like I've learned is that if you just write the book and you don't do all of the other work, it just sits on a shelf and collects dust. Like nobody knows about it. There's a whole nother side to writing the book, to saying it's like promoting the book, launching the book.
Yeah.
It lives forever. Dan Martell said those words to me one time. And after that, I was like, oh my God, it lives on forever. Cause you can't take back the print copies. Like with online, it's like you could delete the video, you could try to take it down. Like, but a book is forever once it goes into print. Now you could stop it, but what's printed is printed.
Yeah. And there's a permanence to it. That's a little intimidating.
It's very intimidating, especially when you have to you have to pick the font size and the type of font and the color of the page. And you're like, oh my God, there's so many choices. But it's also, to me, not just the purpose of what you're writing it for, but what are you doing with it afterwards? Because I think sometimes we do things and then we move on and it's like to the next thing or the next thing. And, you know, I told my husband, I said, oh my gosh, all he's talking about is One Layer Deep. Let's make it One Layer. I'm like, oh my God, I'm tired of hearing about it. And the book hasn't even come out yet. I'm like,
that's all because I've been talking about.
He's been going off the deep end with it. And I think it's funny. And I was just joking with him when I said, I was like, oh God, not another One Layer Deep reference. And it's almost like you're launching a whole nother business with this book. Because I don't think people really realize the depth of work that goes into not just the writing, but okay, now there's a website. Now there's like email. Where's the email go? Where are the tools and resources from the book go? If you're giving any, does it need a social media page? Are we going to have ads that you know, go to the book to buy and to promote it? And because if you write it to create impact, but nobody knows about it, you're not creating the impact.
Right. And the other thing too about marketing that a lot of people are really intimidated by is if they don't have a big social media presence before they write a book, then they feel like it's just an uphill climb from there. We're like, how in the world am I going to get this book into the hands of people who need it or want it? So there's also a lot of preparation and kind of foresight you need to have before just writing the book or publishing a book whenever it's done. I mean, there's so much strategy that goes into, which is why, you know, we hire other people like marketing experts and publishing experts to help us do this, because they understand the market in a way that we don't. Even me as a writer who like knows things, I don't know anything that they know. Because there's certain times for maximum impact for the topics that you're talking about. So if you actually want to make as big of an impact, you know, going the self-publishing route, which is doing it just by yourself, is typically the hardest way to do it, which a lot of people do it because it's cheaper, it's easier. Some people have less, I don't think some people want it to be as controlled by other people if it's their own book and they've, you know, maybe they've written it themselves or worked on it themselves, but that's kind of necessary. You need to bring in experts from different things. So yes, bring in an expert ghostwriter, but also bring in an expert marketer and an expert social media person, because those are the real people who are going to tell you, this is how you make an impact with your book.
Yeah. Cause I had a writer's ghostwriting team. I had a publishing team. I had a media team. And then I had also a book consultant that was specifically for the best-selling kind of like campaign. So I had, what was it, four different segments of people, not including the marketing team I had in-house already that we were preparing for.
Right.
And I think you made a good, what you said was great because, yeah, you think you need all these things, but writing, it from the idea I got from first talking about it and like connecting with you guys was 2 years to launch almost.
Yeah.
Right. Because if the ghostwriter is great, they have a wait list. Right. And so you might have to wait 3 months or 4 months. And then from there it's, you start the process, and it took me almost 2 years. Cause I started, no, it's not quite 2 years, but almost 2 years. No, it would be 2 years in November.
In November, I think.
From when we started actually just talking about it. The sales call. So almost 2 years. And so what I did was I made a goal that I wanted 20,000 followers on certain social media, like for my Facebook page. Okay. And I got it. I got 20,000 like 2 weeks ago. And that's why? Amazing. Because then I could reach more people and make more impact. So I'm working on building that recognition, that thought leadership, while we're working on the writing process and like all these other things that are in motion. Because if you write the book and you don't do anything with it, it's nothing's going to happen.
Nope. And it just sits there. And I do see there are some people who just feel like they want to write a book for that purpose. Go have it. Go do it. That's totally fine. If your goal is not necessarily to reach the masses, even if it's niche masses, you know, that's fine. But I think the majority of people, at least in our industry, people who want to hire ghostwriters, want to do it because it's an idea that's worth it. Because again, hiring ghostwriters, hiring editors, hiring a publishing team, hiring a marketing team, that's not cheap. Like it's an investment. And the investment is, you have to invest in something that's meaningful. You can't just invest in just because I want to. So, you know, like you have to kind of choose one or the other. Either you're going to make an investment, or you're going to do it the easy, maybe cheaper way, but it maybe won't land as much.
Yeah. It's really interesting, like the whole journey. And it was funny going through this, and now you can call yourself like an author, right? Yeah. Which comes with a whole nother level of authority. And then it was funny because as I was reaching, or I was trying to get to a bestseller, right? Stamp, title, however that works. That's a whole process to learn. you know, a few people come up to me and they're like, Libby, I don't think you know how big this is. Like, this is going to change you, change how people look at you. And I didn't really think about that as I was chasing it. I'm very like literal. Here's the goal. Like, let's just chase it. Yeah. And so I think a book is really important too, if you want to be a thought leader in your industry or in a segment. Like, I don't want to be necessarily a thought leader in a particular industry because I own software, I own home service. I'm passionate about both. I'm more passionate about like how we build a company versus the type of company. But I think it really is a huge differentiator if you're trying to create a, you know, you. And I think it's a buzzword. I hate when people say they're trying to create a movement and they call it a movement. I'm like, you can't call it a movement. And like, it's like trying to say, oh yeah, like I'm cool. You can't say you're cool because now you're not cool anymore.
Because now you're not cool anymore.
People that are trying to create that movement in people or in a crowd, it's really something to think about. And
I recently read Start With Why by Simon Sinek. And it made a lot of things make sense because when you look at companies that are in certain industries, you're like, why is one pulling ahead more than the other? If you look at thought leaders, why is this one person? Why is Gary Vee so effective? Why does everyone, and he's correct. He'll say, he'll cuss, he'll yell, he'll do these things that maybe in someone else's perspective, you're like, oh my gosh, I could never do that. I could never yell at somebody over the phone and tell them they're being lazy or whatever it is. But he is so willing to do that, and people love him for it. So there's, you know, it makes you wonder, why are these people so impactful? Why are these companies so impactful over all these other companies that essentially do the same thing they do? And it boils down to not what they do, not how they do it, but why they're doing it. So when you're, I mean, your book, your why wasn't the, I mean, you have a how, which is obviously what the whole book is about, the one layer deep process. You have what, which is also incorporated in that entire thing as well, which is like playbooks, process, how to store playbooks, all of that. But the why is because you want to improve entrepreneurs' lifestyles. You want to make it to where they're not stuck at work for 80 hours a week. They actually get to go enjoy time with their families, with their children. They don't have to do this weird work-life balance thing that seemingly doesn't exist. They can just coexist in both spaces. That is a powerful why. And that's why people come up to you and they say, this is big, because you're not just a bestseller. You're a bestseller because of the message that you're sending to people. And people love that message. They're like, yes, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I need in my life, because people are hungry for relief. And if they can get relief from, you know, one book or another, like Atomic Habits, yes, that provides relief in some way, which is why it's been a bestseller for years. Five Back Your Time provides relief because it literally gives people back their time and it has given them this aha moment. But it's not just the what or the how. It's all about why you're doing it, and your why is as strong as it gets.
Yeah, I love that, like the why. And so I think for those who are interested in writing that book, if they know the why, sometimes we know the why, but we don't really want to say it out loud, or maybe we don't want to write it down. We just keep it to ourselves because we're just maybe not there yet. But how would you start? How would you recommend, if I want to write a book, where should I start?
Yeah, that's a big question. So the storytelling comes later, frankly. So don't even worry if you have any stories to tell. You do. It's fine. I think, so there's the biggest one, I mentioned it a little bit earlier, which is if you see a problem that needs solving that hasn't been solved before, and this is specifically for nonfiction, which is, of course, yours is a prescriptive nonfiction. Most business books are prescriptive nonfiction. And there's a level of storytelling versus tactics that goes into that. So it doesn't really matter how tactical or not. It's still within that category. And if you see a problem that needs solving that either has been solved in a way, but maybe isn't effective for you, if you didn't connect with that one book, you're like, okay, I know, you know, okay, there's the 4-hour work week, there's Five Back Your Time, there's X, Y, and Z. People have tackled similar problems over and over and over again. So you don't have to worry about the originality of the problem, but it's how you solve the problem that makes the difference. And that's what's going to connect with people. Because I guarantee you, there are other people who think like you, who want the solution that you've figured out. And you just don't even know who those people are until you start to figure out, you know, what the information is, like what the whole picture is. So essentially, define a problem that you have the answer to. Maybe don't go looking for problems that you don't know how to solve, because that's writing a book for no reason. And once you figure out essentially what the solution is, figure out why it's different, why it matters, and meaning why it matters is in how it's going to change their life for the better. So the solution can't be, you know, something that's, they will go, oh, that's cool. Didn't think about that before. That's not deep enough. It should be something that they carry with them and can actively utilize, I mean, hopefully in their everyday life. But if not in their everyday life, at least regularly throughout the rest of their life. That should be the goal of this problem you're looking for.
Yeah.
That's where you should start.
I'm laughing because buy back your time. Those were concepts Dan took and made them his own. Like, they're not like Kayla just said, there's not an original idea left out there. It's regurgitated or changed, or you've made it your way, or you took pieces from it that worked or didn't work. And that's what I did actually from Buy Back Your Time. We referenced Dan in the book, but I also said, hey, like, you don't want to buy back your inefficiencies. And so that's what happened to me. It's like, yeah, I could buy back my time and I tried it, but like, oh gosh, like, hey, I was buying back my inefficiencies. So I had to create like another version of how do I buy back my time? How do I go deeper? And love Dan's book, but that's kind of like that stance is like, hey, others probably have this problem too, because they're buying back their inefficiencies. If they don't have things set up properly, or like, it's just, you know, a disaster. And then the other thing I did in the book was I took a really bold stance. It's the anti-playbook playbook. So I took a bold stance. We still use the word playbook, but I'm changing the way people think about it.
Yeah.
Because I took a concept that typically didn't really work for us in home service, and I changed the way we did it. And so like, we have plays, micro plays, right? That's my TikTok of plays, or TikTok of SOPs. We call them micro plays. And what I call a playbook is my owner playbook. It is my holy grail. Mm-hmm. You could call it your library, your, you know, whatever you want to call it. And so I changed what we thought of as playbooks, like with Chris Renzio's playbook book. And I took it and made it my own version that worked for me.
Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it quote unquote original or unique, is because you solved your own problem that you were having. You had this problem where you're like, okay, Dan solved a lot of my problems, but there's still a problem, and I still need to figure out how to solve this. And when you, and I remember at the beginning, when we were going through the figuring out what we were going to write about, that was not what this book was going to be about. Originally, it was like, we didn't figure out exactly what the solution was. So maybe that's a good distinction as well. There are some times where people have this idea where they maybe have this problem that they've solved, but they don't quite know how they solved it or why they solved it. They just know they did, because big thinkers and entrepreneurs and people who are the non-typical, you know, not really employees, or people who are like, no, I have to invent things, I have to build stuff. Those people do things kind of without thinking. They're like, I don't know, I just did it. And that's brilliant, but it's not really helpful if you're trying to help other people, which is why, again, you kind of need someone who's able to take that genius and figure out why it's genius. Because sometimes you don't even know. I don't even think you knew how genius, which again, I know you didn't know, because you kind of doubted. You're like, is this worth anything? And I was like, yes, this is so good. So good. And it is, it's brilliant. You know, it's going to help so many people.
Awesome. I just want to thank you so much for diving in and, you know, answering questions. I think once you like publish a book and become a writer, everyone is in your circle who's ever wanted to write a book is now asking you the question, like, how do I do it? How do I get started? Yeah. Where do I start? And that's why I wanted to bring Kayla on to kind of explain the process. How do we work through it? You know, financially, the investment, it depends on how serious you want to take it. You know, I did not cheapy out whatsoever on my book writing journey. But I also had the ability, like Dan, because I was in Dan's group, gave me access to all the things he used to write Buy Back Your Time. From the ghostwriters to the media team to the publishing team and so on. So it depends. And I think that if I wouldn't have spent so much money, I probably wouldn't have taken as serious. But when you make that huge investment, you're like, oh my God, this has to work. We have to make sure we're doing a good job.
All your focus in on it. Yeah. All your brain power, all your best ideas. Yeah. You really bring your A game.
You do. And I think if you, you know, if you pay, you pay attention.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think, you know, if you're interested in writing a book, hiring somebody to help you again, because if we pay, we pay attention, whether that's hiring a writer, a ghostwriter, whoever it is. I think if you want to do it, don't try to figure it out alone. Look for that resource. Look for that help that can help you, one, accelerate the process, but also they already know the process.
Yeah. Find the experts who are experts at what they do, because, you know, for them, this is, that's what they're extremely good at. They can't do what you do. No. I cannot do what you do. And so, you know, it's also a good thing to kind of put out there, because I get this question a lot too, as a writer, people will ask me, why do you charge what you charge? What is that for, essentially? And because people don't know, some people don't know how hard it is to write a book. A lot of people see so many people writing books out there. They're like, well, I guess you could just put your ideas on paper, you know? So there's kind of two different sides to it. Some people see writing and they go, well, you can use ChatGPT, right? Like you can use AI to kind of help scope it out and you can do all that, which you could. Don't recommend it necessarily, because it makes it really, really gunky. But then there's the other side who totally gets why writing a book is really, really hard. And there's so much that goes into it. And to not just, I mean, you could write a book, but to make the book that is actually worth your investment. You mentioned earlier, books are permanent. If you understand that books are permanent, you want someone who knows what they're doing. You also want someone who knows good ideas from ideas, really good storytelling from storytelling. That's what makes a book, yes, a bestseller, but also really, really impactful for people. And sometimes you just have to find the experts in those fields to accomplish that.
Awesome. I love it. So we'll go ahead and wrap up. We've been on for quite a little while, but we'll wrap up. Yeah. We'll make sure to put Kayla's information in our show notes. So if you guys want to reach out, you have more questions about writing a book or the ghostwriting process, that way you can connect with her. And we'll make sure we have her website and social media handles in there as well. Any last words before we sign off, Kayla?
I'm just really grateful that you invited me here to be able to talk about this. It's literally what I love to do, and I love to talk to anybody and everybody who will listen to me. So I'm very grateful for this opportunity. So thank you, Libby.
Really. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Absolutely. And we'll see you guys on the next episode. Hiring sucks, right? Sorting through bad applications, ghosted interviews, and wasted time. It's all exhausting. That's why we built WooRecruit, the hiring system designed to attract and convert the right people for your business fast. What are some of the benefits? Well, you get more qualified applicants without lifting a single finger. Increase your show rate, eliminate the worry of ghosting. Track every single step of our process with real-time data. If you're tired of hiring headache, go to WooRecruit.com and let us start filling your open roles today.